Welcome to Haunted Hospitality, Southern stories told by Spooky Gingers. I'm Robin.
And I'm Zoe, and I have a story for you guys today. But first, Robin, how is life?
Life is good. I forgot to prepare anything. My cat's by me. She's nice. If you heard a cat meowing in the last episode, reaching up and pawing at an arm for pets, it was probably her. Because I was like, what's that weird dinosaur sound? And I looked down. And it was her, but I didn't want to interrupt you and let you know.
Oh, I'm sorry.
It was Remy.
Yeah.
How are you?
I'm good. Robin, do you know what NaNoWriMo is?
I do, and I know what you're about to say, and I'm so proud of you.
So NaNoWriMo, for those who don't know, stands for National November Writing Month. And the idea is that you sit down and you write 1,667 words a day. And by the end of the month, you'll have a novel that's 50,000 words. Short novel. But the idea is that you'll have 50,000 words. And it's kind of like a challenge that people who write do sometimes, especially if you're kind of in a funk. If you've ever heard of Inktober, it's kind of like that just for writers. I have tried since 2018. To do NaNoWriMo, with the exception of last year, I did take a break. I don't remember what my reasoning was, but I have never successfully done NaNoWriMo. And on the 31st, as I will say in every episode, I guess, of October, I was flying to Vegas for my honeymoon. And I told Kari, and I was like, oh, I kind of want to do NaNoWriMo this year, but I don't actually want to do NaNoWriMo this year because, I mean, we're going to be on a honeymoon. Why would I want to write while we're on a honeymoon? And Kari was like, do it. So because he pushed me to do it and he made sure that we took time every day so that I could write, I actually ended up writing every single day until the 21st when I hit the 50,000 word mark. And so I have written a little bit more because I'm not finished yet. I'm only like a third of the way through the book that I'm writing right now.
But oh, wow.
Yeah. It kind of got away from me. And unfortunately, what was supposed to be one book actually ended up turning into a series of books just because of pacing issues. But
how very George R. R. Martin of you.
Oh, well, thank you. I think. but it would be a really, really, really long book if it was one book, because I'm 13 chapters in and I'm only a month into what's supposed to be a year long saga kind of thing.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
Yeah. And I was like, I need to hurry through this. I need to hurry through this. But then it was just like, it kind of started writing itself and I had to include certain scenes. And so there was so many character development that I don't know. But so I kind of ended up being like, okay, this is going to have to be a series. But I'm so excited. It is a rated R book. So I probably won't tell my family, close family, to read it. But I'm super excited because I've kind of like got my kick back. So even I haven't mm-hmm. written every single day just because now that I hit that 50,000, I don't have like a motivating factor. But I wrote like a full chapter today. So I'm still writing. Okay. So I'm excited.
Well, I'm very happy for you.
Thank you. Thank you very much.
You're welcome. You're welcome very much. that's awesome. I'm glad you found your writerly speed or writerly, but groove. This is a great use of the word groove.
Very groovy.
Very groovy. Not scurvy at all.
Not scurvy at all. That's a reference to the last episode. If you guys don't know,
listen to it.
But Robin,
so Zoe.
Oh, go ahead.
Yeah.
I was going to ask if you have a something.
I do have a something something, which you know, because I have decided for like the second something something in a row to actually make you do equal or more work for it than I have to do.
Oh, don't worry. I realize that.
Okay, so what we're doing is a something southern, and in the South right now, it's November and it's chilly.
It's chilly.
So we've previously done something southerns where we have a hot take, which is a take that is not commonly shared. And we've done cold takes, where it is a statement everybody agrees with. But now we're doing chilly takes, where it's like most people will probably agree, but a few people will be angry.
Yes.
So I'm going to just go first.
Yeah, you go first.
Because I'm rude. So my chilly take. Okay, so I read a lot more Twitter bios for podcasts by the nature of the division of roles. And almost like a third of the time, I open up a new Twitter bio of a podcast, and they're like, we're just two to three friends talking about anything that comes to mind. And so my chilly take is, if you're going to have a podcast, have a topic.
I agree with that statement.
Thank you. Thank you very much. And I don't mean to be calling anybody out. I'm not naming names, but I have noticed too much that is happening. And my main quandary with it is, like, I can hear people talking about nothing all day long. Like, why am I listening to yours? Because I don't know you. So why am I listening to you talk about nothing? I can listen to my friends talk about nothing. And, like, that's fine. They're my friends. I will talk about nothing with them. But, like, I need to be drawn in by a topic I'm interested in. And if it's nothing, then I'm not going to listen. So that has been my chilly take.
Okay.
So we do have a chilly take?
So I did prepare a few because there's one that always springs to mind, but I think I already did it as my cold take. I just don't remember what my cold take was.
Okay, I have something in mind, and if you say it, I am going to give you heck for it.
It's not the pants should have pockets one.
Okay, thank God, because that was her hot take, people. Hot take, all pants should have pockets.
So my chilly take is having hair dyed unnatural colors or having tattoos should not be something that prevents you from getting a job or make you seem less professional, with the exception of if you have something extremely vulgar that is in a non-coverable area and you want to work with children.
I agree with that, except I do have one. I have a little asterisk to your chilly take. I think that if you have something vulgar, like, tattooed on you, I'm not saying, like, you shouldn't get the job. I'm just saying, like, that's a little bit unprofessional if it is not covered up, like, in general.
Right. Yeah, I personally...
being a normie.
I personally dislike seeing nudity depicted in tattoos.
Oh, my God. So many men have tattoos of naked women.
And it's so a major pet peeve of mine. And I don't know if that's going to lose us a couple followers, but I mean, it's your body. You do what you want. But
like, yeah,
but like, cover it up if you're going to be somewhere with children.
Yeah.
If it's not somewhere I can walk around in a bikini, it shouldn't be out, because there's no way a graphic of a naked body.
Saying, like, not like as in like. They don't have to be in a bikini. It doesn't have to be covered by a bikini for them. But like, if it's like a place like where you aren't like kind of anything goes on a beach, you know?
Yeah. Okay. A beach, fine. A bar, whatever, you know. But like,
yeah,
a zoo. Come on.
I get that. I was thinking more along the lines of like. Like really kind of hardcore cursing or like very vulgar sayings where you're just like, come on.
Yeah.
Come on.
Or like just like the depiction of a murder or I don't know.
Is that on people?
I've seen some kind of gnarly stuff.
I don't like that.
No.
I don't like that.
People get tattoos of like famous serial killers on their bodies.
That
is like 12 levels of wrong.
To stop. Yeah. Like, y'all, glorification is not good.
No.
Stop it.
No.
Not that anybody who listens is doing that, but like to the population at large, if we say getting tattoos with serial killers.
If we say it out into the world enough, maybe they'll hear.
Maybe they will. Somebody's gonna email be like, I got my tattoo of Ted Bundy covered up, thank you.
Yeah, 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 please. But yeah, that, I guess that kind of smirred into like four different chili takes. But
we did. We got into tattoos.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Are you gonna get another one soon?
I have been doing research. Unfortunately, we've had a lot to spend our money on recently. But Kari wants another tattoo because all he has is a small tattoo on his wrist, to the point that I forget that he has a tattoo sometimes. But he wants to get a tattoo, but unfortunately, since he is Black, it's kind of harder to find a tattoo artist that has, like, in their portfolio work that they've done on Black skin. Like, that's a that's an issue within the tattoo community. And so we're trying to find somewhere we could go together and do, like, a little date night where we get tattoos.
Oh, that'd be cute.
Yeah. It's just the style I want and the style he wants is very, very different. And you're not necessarily going to find artists who do these two styles in the same parlor. Because he wants a tattoo that makes it look like a piece of his skin was ripped off and it's like a cyborg underneath. No, it's not going to be gory.
I mean, good for him, but that's like, when you said skin ripped off, that freaked me out. Okay.
He wants it on his arm that looks like he's like a cyborg, and it's not going to be like gory or anything. And then Soup does this adorable thing where she'll go on her back and she'll like flip her front paws and just look at you with a tilted head, and her paws are so cute, and I have so many photos of her doing it, and I want that cartoonified and on my forearm.
Oh, that's cute.
Yeah. So, like, I mean, I've always wanted a cat tattoo, so I might as well have it be the cat that I have, you know?
Yeah. But,
so, like, I want a very, very cutesy tattoo, and he wants a very, very mechanical tattoo, and you can't really find those in the same space.
What if y'all had two date nights? So date night number one, get Kari a tattoo. Date night number two, get Zoe a tattoo.
Yeah, yeah, we could do that, yeah.
But I'm just full of ideas. Do you have a story today? What is this podcast about? We need a topic!
It's just two friends hanging out, talking.
Talking about whatever!
No, I actually do have a topic today. It is It is a haunted hotel, and I'm not gonna lie, I did have to go back through our episodes because the story sounded so familiar that I was like, have we done this one before? I was kind of worried that you did it, and because I know you've done a hotel in Texas, but it wasn't this.
Okay.
I'm doing the Driscoll Hotel in Austin, Texas.
Okay. I think I might have like started researching that one time and then stopped.
Okay.
And I can't remember why I stopped. I just know like I had the name Driscoll in my head a lot.
Okay. So apparently Austin, Texas is well known to be haunted.
Oh yeah. That's where Our Lady of the Lake University is, I think. Or it might be San Diego. No, San something. San Sacramento. No, I'm just naming California places. I know geography. Just shut me up.
Okay. So before I get into the full story, I do want to say content warning for suicide. There are two suicides in this, and they're kind of graphic. So just a warning. We'll do a warning right before and when we're done. So this is the hotel in Austin, Texas. It's the oldest operating hotel in Texas, and it was built in 1886 by Colonel Jesse Driscoll. there are two, it's a compromise of two buildings that are connected, the original four-story building, and then there is a second 13-story building that was built in 1930 to expand the hotel. The hotel originally had, this is so, like, anyway, it originally had two separate entrances. Well, technically there's three, but there was a entrance on the 6th Street side for men, and when you go in there, there's like a barbershop, there's a lobby, there's the front desk, and you go up to the front desk and you get your room, you can go to the barbershop, you can go to the bar, you can smoke a cigar. And then the second entrance for men was in the alleyway in case you didn't want anyone seeing you go in there for some reason. Now the
purely wholesome reasons, I'm sure.
Oh, I'm sure. So you could surprise your bride or something like that. Yeah,
they were fundraising for charity.
Exactly. So the ladies' entrance was on Brazos Street, and they were able to walk into the door and go directly up to their room once their husbands have secured the keys. And this way, they would not have to deal with the vulgar talk and the cigar smoke in the lobby from the men.
I'm glad. What is up with these places? Just everything is so separated by gender. That was the same thing with the Myrtle's plantation. They were like, this is the parlor for the men and the parlor for the women. Do not mingle. Do not fraternize.
Because what men speak about is not suitable for a lady's ears.
Not at all.
And instead of, you know, telling them not to speak like that when ladies are present, we're just going to separate them. Just separate them. So, anyway, let's get to the ghosts. So, the hotel was built using what many call, quote, blood money, because Colonel Jesse Driscoll was on the Confederate side, and he made his fortune by selling beef to the Confederate soldiers. So, he profited a lot off of the war and on the Confederate side of the war. And so, I mean, I don't know if I would consider that blood money. I mean, it kind of sucks because profiting off of any war is shady. But some people consider it blood money. And so they're like, that's why this hotel is haunted, because it was made from negative beginnings, if that makes sense.
Okay.
Yeah. So another reason it seemed to be set up for hauntings is because where it was built. So this, like, tiptoes the line of, I don't want to say vilifying, but, like, kind of touching onto Native American culture as other, because, you know, that we have
the othering, yeah.
Yeah. We have the issue of the ancient Indian burial ground, meaning somewhere where the Native Americans buried they're dead people just like we do.
Yeah.
So there were three tribes in the area, the Apache, the Tonkawa, and the Comanche. All three revered the springs that the Driscoll Hotel was built over, and they supposedly believed that the springs were sacred and they contained water that has the ability to trap both willing and unwilling spirits. So the idea is that the water could trap your spirit there.
I do think that, like, what a like, that would be a very promising, like, how do I say this? That's a great beginning to a ghost story.
Yeah.
That, yeah, like, there is, like, a reason, something is trapping spirits here other than, like to make this place special in, yeah, that lens, you know?
Yeah, it's kind of like the Lady of the Lake in the Haunting of Bly Manor.
That's honestly what my brain went to. Yeah.
Yeah.
Because the idea is that she creates, like, this gravity, sorry, spoilers, creates this gravity that keeps the spirits there.
Yeah. And to make matters worse, the springs were actually selected as the area to build the hotel because Jesse Driscoll was like, oh, this will be my water supply. And so they literally take the water and pump it into the hotel, meaning that's the water they're consuming, showering in, cooking in, is this water that supposedly traps spirits.
Gotcha. Okay.
Yeah. Granted, I feel like there's probably a little bit more nuance to that, and it's not great that he's like, oh, that's a sacred place to the Native Americans? Let me build on top of it.
Oh, completely. Oh, completely. Yeah. That's, like, understood.
So it's a little bit fitting that the first ghost we're going to talk about is the founder himself, Colonel Jesse Driscoll. So once the hotel opened, after Jesse had put pretty much all of his money into it and gotten loans for it, he spent the rest of the money that he had on alcohol, gambling, and women.
The three big ones.
Yeah. I'm unsure if that meant prostitutes or if he just spent his money on various women. But because of that, Jesse didn't have much to his name other than the hotel. And then he gambled the deed to the hotel and then lost. So now he doesn't have the hotel. He's penniless. And this winter comes in and he kills all of his cattle. And so now he has to sell his beef company to somebody at a loss, and he's penniless, and he dies of a stroke May 3rd, 1890, so 4 years after the hotel was finished.
Oh, really? Okay.
And it's from the stress, supposedly, of losing all his money. So he had a favorite room on the corner of the building with windows that overlooked both 6th Street and Brazos, and he was known to stay in that room when he was alive for the brief period of time he actually owned the hotel. 1 year, years after his death, there was a man staying in the room. We're going to call him Bob to make this less confusing. Bob was staying in the room, and he woke up at 3 a.m., and he saw a gentleman standing in the room, looking out the windows and puffing on a cigar. Bob then said, "What the hell are you doing in my room?" And the gentleman turned and looked at him with an expression that said, "Your room?" So Bob, like, rolls over, reaches over, turns on the bedside lamp, looks back to where the gentleman was standing, and he's gone. He's vanished. Poof. But the curtain was moving, and there's still a cloud of cigar smoke.
Ooh.
Yeah.
That's cool.
Yeah. Speaking of cigars, apparently he was well known to smoke them and stand in the lobby and greet people and smoke the cigar. So even though the hotel now is non-smoking, very frequently in the elevators, in the halls, and in the lobbies, people will smell his cigar smoke, even though they can't find anyone smoking, to the point that there was one security guard. He was, like, checking out a room for some reason, and he smelled cigar smoke so heavily that he opened the balcony doors and he, like, looked down at the balcony below, because he thought somebody was smoking on that balcony. And as he was, like, leaning over the edge and looking down, he heard a man say behind him, "Got a match?" And so he, like, turns around real quick because the room was previously unoccupied and there was no one there.
I love that because it sounds like Driscoll was taunting him.
Yeah.
Because, like, okay, if in his little ghost world, in this story, he's already smoking his cigar, and he's just like, "I'm just going to mess with this guy who's leaning over a balcony right now."
Yeah, make him scare and jump off, I guess, on accident. Like,
fall over. Yeah.
Yeah. Rumor has it that that security guard did quit that day.
I don't know if I would quit over that.
If you're a non-believer. Like,
yeah, it's just, okay, think, if you were, like, already teetering on the edge of, like, gosh, I don't like my job, yeah, then quit, you know, with that. But, like, it's not like anything was coming at you.
Right, yeah.
No?
But, I mean, some people have less tolerance for the supernatural than you and I.
Well, I mean, like, okay, if I saw something, uh-huh, I think I would largely be out of there. But if you just hear that, it's like, haha, very funny.
Yeah, I feel like that's pretty easy to try to rationalize away, at least, to be like, oh, I imagine things, you know?
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, that was the rumor. I don't know. That wasn't confirmed.
Oh, yeah. Well, I'm just going with it, you know?
The other thing is apparently he really likes female musicians. There is this woman who was performing there, and she stayed in one of the rooms. Her name is Annie Lennox. I don't know if you know her, but she's a Scottish singer. And she said that she felt watched while she was there, like the whole time she was there, even when she was alone in her room, to the point that she wore her clothes while showering because she didn't feel comfortable undressing.
She didn't want anybody to see her.
Yeah.
Good for her. I don't know.
Yeah.
You do you.
Yeah.
That makes me think of like this scene in Just Like Heaven, where he's like it's a ghost in a coma. She's not dead. And he knows that this ghost is haunting his apartment and watching as her move. So he like showers in his boxers.
That's kind of funny. But sad, yeah. But funny.
Oh, they end up together. It's fine.
When she's back in her body.
Yeah.
Okay. Okay.
Yeah.
That would be weird.
There's... I mean, a little bit before it, but yeah.
There is another female musician named Johnny.
No, I want her to be a musician.
A musician. Her name is Johnette Napolitano. Okay. She was in the band.
I'm sure you pronounced that correctly.
I'm sure. She was in the band Concrete Blonde. And after she performed at the hotel and stayed there a night, she wrote a song called Ghost of a Texas Ladies Man after she was haunted by him for the whole night she was there. And I'm going to share a couple lyric snippets with you.
Okay.
So, again, this is Ghost of a Texas Ladies Man by Concrete Blonde. One snippet. I saw a face in the shower door. Cowboy smile came and faded. I reached for... my towel on the floor. I didn't think it was exactly where I laid it. And the way I understood that to be is like she reached for it and it wasn't where she thought she put it down. So she had to kind of like look for it.
I love this.
She said, I'm not afraid. I'm not afraid. Da, da, da. And then it said she was saying that too. Whatever it was floating in the air about my bed. Yeah. And then one of the last lines is, I reached to turn out the light. He wouldn't let me near it. He seemed so glad to see a woman in the flesh. That's Driscoll, creepy.
Lay off a little bit. These women are just trying to live their musician lives and go to sleep.
Musician. Yeah.
That's so good. Well, I've never heard a haunting documented in a song before.
I don't think I have either. We had a cryptid in a song, I think.
Which cryptid?
Was it the Lizard Man? It might have been the Lizard Man. But I do remember reading off lyrics at one point. Oh, no. It wasn't a cryptid. It was the haunted store. The cursed store where people kept dying in Georgia. They called it like Hell Publix or something.
Oh, Kroger. It was a Kroger.
Yeah, that had a song about it.
Wow.
So while he prefers female musicians, he does like any woman. So if you're a woman at the hotel, you may feel a touch on your arm or your back as if he was like coming up to you and just like kind of being like, hey, how you doing?
Hey there, little missy.
And there is a painting of him in the lobby, and they advise that you not look into the eyes, otherwise he will, quote, relentlessly stare into your soul until you cry.
Okay, so Zoe, you know you cry if you feel like there's something
spooky going on. Yeah.
Spooky going on. I would just want you to look at it. And then I'd just be looking at you, be like, is she
gonna cry?
Is she gonna cry?
Yeah. This is the next couple ghosts, and this is where the suicide warning comes in. I will say when it is over. Not that that really helps, I don't think, because if you're fast forwarding. Anyway, so these are the brides. So the first bride, no one knows the exact date of, but they do know that she checked into room 525 after being left at the altar. So she was still wearing her wedding dress when she checked in, and she did end up going into the room, and she laid in the bathtub while still wearing her dress and did kill herself. We don't know the details of how, what, when, where, why. Well, I guess we knew the where, but we don't know many details beyond that. But people claim that she still walks in the halls and that you can see a sad woman wearing her Victorian era wedding dress around the room 525.
So I'm going to ask something because I feel like a lot of these hotels have a very similar story of a bride killing herself. And actually, when you said, like, I feel like we'd heard this story before, that was honestly my, like, first thought.
Mm-hmm.
So, like, do we know if this is something that actually happened or just folklore that is built up around the hotel?
So that one, we don't have proof that it actually happened. But the mm-hmm. second one, we do. There's, okay. like, firsthand okay. accounts of the people who found her.
Okay.
So the other one is in 1991. Another bride checked into the room. She, room 525. And her fiancé had just called off their wedding. And so she rented the room. She spent $40,000 of his money on a shopping spree and food. And then she lined up all the things she purchased next to her bed, went into the bathtub with a pillow and a gun, and shot herself in the head using the pillow to muffle the sound. After she didn't check out, they were knocking on the door. They ended up having to take the door off its hinges, and they found her in the bathtub.
Mm-hmm.
So guests claim that they see a woman in older clothing carrying a bunch of shopping bags up and down the halls of the hotel. Others say they will see her walking around with a pistol in her hand.
Okay.
Yeah.
That would is be she concerning. Wearing a wedding dress while she's holding a pistol? Because I think if I just saw a woman with a pistol, my first thought wouldn't be ghost.
No. This one was not wearing a wedding dress. In any of the sources I read, I think the only reason they call her a bride rather than an ex-fiance is to tie her into the previous story to be like, oh, there's two brides that died by suicide in this room.
Oh, so it's the same room. Okay.
Yeah, it was the same room. And they were both in the bathtub.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Yeah. So that is the end of the graphic part. But we are going to talk about more hauntings in that room. So, one blog writer who stayed in room 525 checked in, not knowing that it was haunted. In fact, they were leaving to go to the bar downstairs when they ran into a woman who was, like, lingering outside their room. And she said that she had asked for the room because she was a paranormal enthusiast. And she had asked for the room, but they said they had already checked it out to someone else. And she asked them if they would want to switch rooms with her because she went ahead and paid for the corner room. And they were like, well, no, we don't really believe in ghosts, whatever. We're just kind of here to have a fun birthday weekend.
Yeah.
And they were just like, get away from us, you crazy lady. But then while they were downstairs at the bar, they ended up Googling, found the story, and they kind of got a little freaked out. But after, like, drinking at the bar for a little bit, they're like, oh, it's fine.
Mm-hmm.
They get back to the room. They're kind of a little bit drunk. And they started, like, getting into bed, and the overhead lights were flickering. But the bedside table lights weren't. So they're like, it's probably just a power issue, but it's weird that the side lamps aren't flickering, but only the overhead lights are flickering. But they kind of wrote it off. But then as they were going to, like, about to go to bed, they heard 5 really loud knocks at the door. And the writer supposedly got out of bed, ran to the door, looked out the peephole, and there was no one there. And so he opened the door and looked up and down the hall, and he didn't see anyone. And he didn't hear, like, kids laughing, being like, oh, we just got him, you know. So they tried to, like, brush it off, but they ended up being so freaked out that they packed their bags and went to the checkout area, and they were like, can you get us into any other room? And the front desk said that their systems were down due to a citywide power issue. And they're like, okay, maybe that was why our lights were flickering, but our side lamps weren't. But because the systems were down, the staff were unable to put them into a room. And so they actually ended up going home in the middle of the night.
Okay.
And just so we don't get sued by the Driscoll Hotel, I do want to note that the hotel did remove all charges from the room, and they did not get charged for their stay there.
Well, good. That's good. They should have changed with the paranormal lady. Though, honestly, I get, like, why you wouldn't, because you don't know her. And also, like, I'd be like, did she poison the room? I don't know.
Yeah, and, like, she didn't tell them which room she was staying in. So there's no guarantee that she would be able to find them again. Or they would be able to find her again.
Yeah.
Yeah. On that blog post, however, there was this man with the username Norman McGuire, who said he stayed in room 525, and around 10 p.m., the lights flickered and the TV started to show only static, and then the toilet flushed by itself and the shower turned on by itself. So he went straight down to the front desk, demanded to move rooms. They said that they didn't have any rooms open, and so he ended up going to another hotel that night.
Yeah. Now, okay, the lights. Mm-hmm. I get that lights are what we've decided is, like, a prime clue that hauntings are happening, but, like, also it could be, like, wiring issues.
But why was the toilet flushing on its own, and how did the shower turn on?
I don't know.
Yeah. I mean,
I can more see the toilet flushing on its own.
I mean, that could easily be old man lies on internet, but
old men do lie on the internet.
But Norman's story actually isn't done. He said about 2 years later, he met up with a friend in Austin. And this part of the story makes me go, did you really do this? But he says that he talked to a friend and told him the story, and the friend wasn't convinced. So they went to the Driscoll and supposedly were able to access the 5th floor. And they walked up to the 5th floor and they found room 525. And keep in mind, they were not staying here. So they didn't have, like, I mean, some elevators require, and hotels require you to have a pass to be able to get up to your floor. Some of them do. I don't know if this one does.
I've never been to one that did.
Oh, really? Okay.
Maybe I just don't stay in nice enough places.
But, I mean, he supposedly went up to the 5th floor. And they went to room 525, and the door was open about a foot. And so they walked up to the room, and they called out and asked if anyone was in there, and they didn't hear anyone. And so they, like, peeked into the room to see if they could see anything, which creep, whatever. And Norman says, quote, as we did, the worst stench you could ever imagine came upon us. It was a smell of rotten eggs or sulfur. It was so strong, it forced us away gagging. We got the hell out of there. And I do want to remind you, sulfur is the smell of the devil.
Thank you for that reminder, sir. So you're saying they were, like, opening the door to the room?
Like, the door was open, and then they, like, kind of pushed it open and peeked in, and that's when the smell hit them.
Maybe someone had just gone to the toilet, and horrible smells occurred.
There could have been, like, maybe the door was open because there was a plumber in there because the sewer backed up in the room.
I also think that, like, if I don't see how it would be helpful to your investigation at all if, like, you and your friend, you were talking to, like, a friend about, like, a haunted room, and you just went to the haunted hotel and stood outside the room, because it's like,
what was the plan?
What was the plan? And also, like, in what world are hotel doors left open ever? Yeah. Unless there is, like, they are actively being cleaned.
Yeah, no, that's weird.
Whether somebody's in there or not, hotel doors are not left open.
Mm-mm.
I don't know.
Yeah.
It's fishy.
But that is the end of the bride's room. So we're going to move on to the painting. The painting is on the fifth floor of the hotel. It's an unnamed work by Richard King, but it was inspired by the Charles Garland painting called Love Letter. And I did try to do some research on the painting Love Letter, because supposedly that painting is also haunted, but I literally could not find a single source that was talking about Love Letter and not this replica painting. So,
okay.
The painting is of a little girl holding a bouquet of flowers in one hand and a letter in the other. The girl supposedly is Samantha, the 4-year-old daughter of the U.S. Senator Temple Lee Houston. They were staying in the hotel when Samantha died in an accident, and supposedly the senator asked the artist to use her image in his painting. Samantha died by falling to her death when she tripped downstairs. She was chasing her bouncy ball and hadn't noticed when the hall turned into stairs, and she unfortunately landed on one of the steps the wrong way and broke her neck.
Oh my gosh.
Yeah. And so people believe that then her father reached to the painter, who was planning on painting anyways, and said, can you use Samantha as your muse, basically, to kind of immortalize her. So for the ghost, paranormal investigators have picked up the sound of a ball bouncing through the hallways and down the stairs, and the sound of a child giggling. Some people have reported an apparition of a little girl on the grand staircase of the mezzanine. You may see a child in your room or in the hallway, or if you bring your own kids, they may be playing with an invisible friend, and you'll ask their name, and they say it's Samantha.
I really am freaked out by kid ghosts.
Yeah. Yeah. Can I freak you out a little bit more?
I guess so.
So, many people believe that Samantha also haunts the painting. They say...
Yeah, I was getting that.
They say that if you walk by it, you'll feel the presence of something sinister following you until you leave the hotel.
I don't get the sense that that's Samantha.
But because it's of the painting of, it's at the painting of Samantha, that's what they like, kind of. They're like, oh, Samantha.
I don't think Samantha. Okay, Samantha was a 4-year-old little girl.
Five.
Samantha was a 5-year-old little girl. Samantha was a 4-year-old little girl.
I'm sorry.
I don't think that she's sinister.
And it does go back to the whole, like, devil mimics children thing, too.
I feel like you have a theory about this hotel.
So, okay, before I get into the rest of the Samantha painting, there is a book. Yeah, there's a little bit more. But there's this book. I didn't read it, so I didn't put in my sources, so I didn't put the author's name. But it's called something along the lines of True Haunting Stories at the Driscoll Hotel, right? And okay. I tried to go on Amazon to see if there was, like, an ebook version of it, but they only had a paperback. But you know how if you go into Amazon, you can, like, have the sneak peek of the inside? Yeah. So I was like, maybe I can take some information from there. But unfortunately, the only thing they had was the forward and the table of contents. And in the table of contents, there was a chapter called The Vortex on the Fourth Floor. And I said, Vortex? And I searched Vortex, Driscoll Hotel. I could not find anything because, of course, there is a bar in Austin, Texas called The Vortex.
Oh.
And so that was just like flooding the SEO. So I have no idea what this vortex is about. And unfortunately, I found this yesterday, so I didn't have time to order the book.
Gotcha. So everybody, if you want to learn more about the vortex on the fourth floor, find this book, buy it, and then, you know,
let us know.
Let us know, I guess.
But anyway, back to the Samantha painting. Some people do not believe that it's a painting of Samantha. Instead, they believe it's just a replica of the original that happens to maybe look like her. However, people feel dizzy around the painting, or they feel nauseous, or feel like they're being lifted off the ground. And others,
okay, yeah, one of these things is not like the other.
And I want to be very specific here. The article I was reading said they feel like they're being lifted off the ground, not they are being lifted off the ground.
Okay, but how does it feel to be lifted off the ground? Like, you're not on the ground.
You're being lifted. I don't know. Maybe it's like minor.
Thanks. That so clears it up, Zoe. Okay. Thank you. Being lifted.
You know, in Star Wars, when.
No. Yeah, okay. When Darth, I watched them. Keep going.
When Darth Vader uses the Force to choke the guy and lift him, that's what I imagine it would feel like.
Do you think that they would then say that they were felt like they were being choked? That their attention might not be on, you know, my feet feel lighter.
Well, maybe she didn't choke them. Maybe she gave them a hug and lifted them up.
I don't think this is Samantha. You think little Samantha, 4-year-old Samantha, is hugging people and then lifting them up a little bit? I really don't think so.
Well, maybe they're like astral projecting 2 inches up.
I don't know how to respond to that. Okay. I don't know. I really like that. Oh, but oh my God, what is happening? Okay.
So let's just move on. Others say that she will try to communicate with them through the painting or her face will change. Okay, moving on. The next ghost.
You're just really tired talking about the painting. Okay, I guess we're done with the painting then.
We're done with the painting. That may or may not be Samantha. So, the President of the United States.
I didn't expect that to be your next statement.
So,
okay.
President Lyndon B. Johnson, you know, the one who's famous for whipping his dick out, he had the first date. Did you not know that?
No, I did. I just didn't know you were going to say that.
He had his first date with his future wife, whose name was Lady Bird, in 1934. Actually, it was her nickname. But they both loved the place so much that they would go there on every special occasion and just because they wanted to. While neither died in the hotel because they loved it so much, people think that they haunt it. And they say that if you go into the ballroom and you look out at the mirror out of the corner of your eye, you'll be able to see Lyndon B. Johnson and Lady Bird in the mirror.
Okay.
Woo! There's the ghost. The next ghost is the resident. So, in the early 1900s, there was this man called Peter Lawless. And honestly, I thought he was gonna, like, be some buccaneer or something where he, like, thieves from the rich and gives to the poor. But no, he was just a ticket agent for the Great Northern Railroad. His wife passed away relatively young without any children. And so he moved into the Driscoll. That's right. He lived there. So he lived on the 5th floor of the hotel, meaning it had to be after the 1930s because that was the main building was 4 floors. And the additional building that had a 5th floor was built in the 1930s. He lived on the 5th floor for 31 years until he died. And guests will see an old man matching Peter's description exiting the elevator lobby, checking his pocket watch, nodding to the staff at the front desk, and then just dissipating.
Do the staff nod back?
That was not mentioned.
I like that the pocket watch is a little bit of a giveaway, and then the disappearing is a major giveaway.
Yeah. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Yeah.
If someone did disappear in front of me, I would believe in ghosts.
Yes. That
like seems... I don't think I would question it at that point, except I might wonder if I had a hallucination.
True. But if other people saw it.
Oh, yeah. Then mm-hmm. like ghosts are real.
Mm hmm. So employees will see him frequently, especially housekeepers. They say that they'll be cleaning their rooms and they'll feel a tingling sensation. And then they look up and see the same man, which they describe as an older man with black hair, dark pants, a white shirt, and a pocket watch. And then as they watch, he will vanish in front of them. So it's kind of like the ghost is like, look at me, look at me. Oh, you're looking at me. Bye.
He's really like just flaunting his ability to change locations.
Yeah.
Or he could still be there, but invisible.
True. He is a little bit of a prankster as well, going along with the whole vanishing act. So there have been several reports of people on the street watching him leave the hotel. He'll stand on the curb and he'll step out into the road and then get hit by a bus
and disappear.
So the bus will pass. There's no body. The bus doesn't react like it just hit someone. But the people on the street are like, oh, my God, what?
I love that.
Yeah. I mean, I feel sorry for the people who see that, but that feels like an old man pulling pranks.
Well, I mean, like, when you have the realization that nobody was there, and then you're left with, what the heck just happened?
Yeah.
Oh, my goodness.
Yeah. But that is my last ghost for you. I have a couple general things to wrap this episode up. Some general things is the hotel itself seems to be built to be spooky, because the hallways are all gray with gray carpet, gray walls, and gray ceilings, and they're long and not really lit up properly. And so it's like long, creepy, quiet hallways that give you goosebumps if you stand in them for too long.
Ooh.
And then the walls are decorated with, quote, creepy paintings where it's depictions of guests in the hotel from like the 1800s and 1900s, where there's at least a few people in the painting staring directly at you.
Oh, I don't like that.
Yeah.
You know, I hadn't thought about it, but like, I guess, you know, because there is artwork in a lot of hotel rooms, you know, but it's mostly like landscapes and abstract pieces. If it were actually people, I do think, like, I don't know if I would go, like, so far as, like, this place is haunted, but I do think, like, it would make you feel like you weren't alone in a way that's not good.
When Kari and I stayed in Luxor, our room had a photo that was just a woman's eye staring at you, and I did not like that at all.
Why did they put that there?
I don't know. And it was, like, right above the beds, too.
Oh.
Yeah. Not great. But the hotel is Yelp's most haunted hotel in Texas. Some people say that the hotel in some sections of the, I'm sorry, say that the lobby, some sections of the hallway, and the elevator feel cold, but not a normal kind of cold, a cold that seeps into your bones and takes your happiness away.
Hmm.
Yeah. And then in the lobby bathrooms, the stall doors will slam shut or into each other if you're the only person in there.
Good to know. Okay, so have you said all the creepy things?
Yes, I have said all the creepy things.
Can I tell you what I think is the most creepy?
The bathroom?
No.
What?
The painting.
Yeah, yeah. The little girl painting? Samantha?
Because I don't think it's the little girl.
So I do think Samantha haunts the halls, because there's a sound of just children giggling in the bouncy ball that you can pick up on EVPs.
Okay.
And there are people who see a little girl and they're like, oh, that's a lost little girl, let me go help her. They're not like, that's a creepy little girl that has sinister energy.
Yeah.
But I do think that there's something sinister with the painting.
Yeah. That's different. That's weird.
Especially the people who, like, I know I, like, glossed over this at the end, but the people who are, like, they look at the painting and it feels like the painting's trying to talk to them, or she'll change facial expressions. It's creepy.
Yeah, I don't know about that. Okay. Maybe, like, okay, maybe it was painted with mercury. So, like, it's really just actually all messing with your head.
Maybe.
I don't think so.
But yes, that is the Driscoll Hotel.
Well, thank you for sharing.
You're welcome.
I enjoyed this one. Thank you.
It literally has the word kill in the name of it. Just letting you know.
Thank you for that little tidbit. Because actually I was picturing it with K-E-L-L. Everyone, if you enjoyed today's episode, please rate, subscribe, review, tell a friendo, subscribe to our Patreon at patreon.com/hauntedhospitality. For just $3 a month, you get a new episode with us.
Yes, and it comes out on the 13th because we are spooky. You can see my sources in my little blog post on hauntedhospitality.wordpress.com. If you have your own spooky story, whether that be true crime or supernatural, you can write to us at hauntedhospitalitypodcast@gmail.com. Or you can slide into our DMs.
Yes, we are on Twitter at Haunted Hosts. We are also on Facebook, Instagram, and TikTok at Haunted Hospitality. We hope to see you there.
Stay spooky.